36. Kanawha lurched in the saddle from a blow he couldn't see. He grabbed his chest and his hand closed around the leather pouch. Something's happened. The prince turned slightly and nudged his horse around a large mud puddle, an act of little value as mud lay everywhere. The river had already receded to its pre-flood level, but the ground around it was a sopping mess, and the rain still fell, although not as hard as before.
"The open rebellion of Northern Elfkana would certainly qualify, yes. But it's not exactly news, is it? As Raleigh's editor sent her the message hours ago?"
"Yes, sir, of course. I was just taking it all in," he said, silently cursing himself for being such a fool. A chill crept over his body despite the warm rain. He looked back over his shoulder at the regiment snaked out behind them and shook his head. "We'll need to get to Lugoth Jor as quickly as possible, but this mud is going to slow us down."
"Then fix it," the prince said.
"Fix it, sir? I didn't bring any paving stones with me." The prince frowned and stood in his stirrups, pulling a highly polished brass telescope from a leather holder strapped to his saddle. The royal cipher was emblazoned on the main tube in skillfully inlaid onyx and ivory and tiny rubies. He opened it to its full length and held it up to his eye, like a captain at sea. Perhaps the river beside them was giving him delusions of nautical grandeur.
"The witch turned night into day. Surely she can do something about this mud. And tell her to be quick about it. We are losing valuable time."
He sat back down, sending a spray of water from his saddle. Kanawha started to say Vecina would never agree to it, even if she was so inclined, as it seemed an impossible thing, but held his tongue. She had turned night into day, and his father had once slowed a waterfall long enough to allow an elf of the Long Watch to drag an uprooted sapling to safety before it plummeted over the edge.
"Today, Major," the prince snapped. "Nothing is more important than securing the star."
"As is keeping it out of the Shadow Monarch's hands and putting down the rebellion," Kanawha added. The prince waved the thought away like an annoying fly.
"Yes, of course. Deprived of the star, the rebellion will founder and die, and the Shadow Monarch will have lost her chance."
He suddenly slapped his thigh and sat up straighter in the saddle.
"And I will have saved Elfkana in the bargain. This is perfect. Major, we must make all possible haste."
"Yes, sir," Kanawha said, touching his heels to Swindera's flanks, and setting out at a trot back along the column in search of Vecina. No one called out to him as he rode by. It would have been simple to believe that it was the rain and exhaustion that kept their heads down, but he knew news of the rebellion had spread among them like wildfire. The pretense that they were going to relieve a garrison manning a tiny mud fort in the middle of nowhere, the regiment led by the very prince of the realm, was too much for even the dimmest of them to believe. And now that they knew that a full-scale rebellion was in the offing, they also knew that their prospect of ever seeing home and hearth again had fallen through the ground, along with their morale. Whether the prince liked it or not, the troops would have to be told the truth. At least most of it. He spotted Jir first, loping alongside Raleigh's wagon. The Bengar was covered from head to paw in mud, but didn't seem the least bit concerned by it, nor by the numerous bushes and plants that went unmarked as he passed by. The reason, perched on top of the canvas-covered wagon, dozing in the rain. Wobbly appeared to be sleeping it off in the most precarious of positions, teetering forward as if he was about to pitch over and then righting himself with the next sway of the wagon. Jir mirrored each movement, no doubt hoping for an easy lunch. Kanawha hoped the pelican had better balance sober than drunk. He'd watched the bird's graceless landing and immediately sympathized with it. He knew what it was like to be a moose among deer. He whistled at Jir, who turned his head for a moment, then went back to watching the pelican. Be that way, Kanawha thought, slowing Zwindera to a trot as he came up to the wagon. Vecina sat beside Raleigh on the front bench, the two involved in yet another conversation. He reined in Zwindera and had him walk alongside, deliberately choosing Raleigh's side of the wagon. The horse didn't seem the least bit disturbed by the brindos this time, even reaching out his muzzle to sniff at the closest Brindo, which flapped its ears in response.
"And what brings you back our way, Major?" Rally asked.
She smiled at him, and he smiled back. Vecina, wrapped in a green cloak with the hood pulled up over her head, did not bother to look at him. Women.
"In light of your recent news, the Prince thinks we need to make all haste to Lugath Jor. For once I am in complete agreement with him."
He waited, but Vecina continued to look straight ahead.
"The Prince has asked, and I know it sounds silly, but he has asked if Mr. Coy might use her powers to assist the regiment in making better time."
Vecina finally turned to look at him, pulling down the hood of her cloak. He'd expected anger, and was surprised to see a thoughtful expression on her face.
"What did he have in mind?"
Kanawa looked at Raleigh, who looked back at him with a knowing smile.
"His Highness has asked if it would be possible to dry the ground underfoot so that we might increase our pace. You know, firm it up a bit so the slogging isn't so tough."
"All right," Vecina said.
Kanawa had already prepared a comeback and was left momentarily speechless. She had an uncanny ability to catch him off guard. He didn't know why, but he found it more attractive than her looks, as stunning as they were.
"I'm sorry."
"I said I'll do it," she said, calmly crossing her arms and staring at him. "For once we are all in agreement. The sooner we arrive at Lugath Jor, the better. However," she said, smiling at him, "I will need assistance."
"Absolutely," Kanawa said, smiling broadly.
Now why couldn't the two of us get along like this all the time, he wondered, ignoring the multiple reasons that suddenly sprang to mind.
"Just tell me what you need, and you will have it."
"You."
"Now wait just 1 minute.
Do you want to get to Lugath Jor quickly or not?" Vecina asked, making as if to pull the hood of her cloak back up.
All right, I'll help. But I'm not doing anything strange."
"This is not a carnival trick." "Rally, please stop the wagon," Vecina said.
Kanawa reined in Zwendera, who took the opportunity to sniff the Brindo a little more thoroughly. While the Brindo and horse were getting acquainted, Vecina hopped down from the wagon and stood in the mud. The last platoon of soldiers marched by, eyeing them curiously, but again none called out. A pall had settled over the entire regiment, and everyone feared to speak loudly. In moments they were alone as the soldiers struggled through the mud ahead of them.
"So what do you need me to do exactly?" Kanawa asked, trying to be helpful.
Vecina took a few deep breaths and closed her eyes.
"Hold me."
Kanawa's heart sped up.
"Hold you?"
"Hold me."
"You want me to hold you?"
"You were in the forest a very long time, weren't you?" Rally asked, her smile as wicked as a newly sharpened blade.
Vecina stamped her foot.
"We are losing time. Now get off that horse and get over here and hold me."
Kanawa kicked his feet out of the stirrups and jumped off Swindera, tossing the reins up to Rally, who tied them off to the wagon. He walked over to Vecina, still waiting for the catch.
"Stand behind me and hold me around the middle. Whatever you do, don't let go."
Kanawa stopped just in front of her.
"Look, I know we haven't..."
Vecina grabbed him by the hand and pulled him around behind her.
"What I need at the moment is your strength. What the Prince asks will require more skeins than I can weave on my own. Now hold me and do not let go."
Kanawa looked up at Raleigh, who was clearly enjoying this. He shrugged and did as Vecina asked, wrapping his arms around her. Her hair danced in front of his mouth. With each breath he let out, the temptation to smell it threatened to overwhelm the real reason he held her in his arms.
"No, not like this. I can feel it even now. You must remove it," Vecina said, pulling away from his grasp. "I cannot do this with that thing touching me."
"Look, if this is all some kind of elaborate game to get me to get rid of it, you can just forget it," he said.
His hand reached instinctively for the pouch. Vecina raised her hands.
"I give you my word you can have it back when we're done. Give it to Rally if you like, but you must remove it if this is to work."
Kanawa looked at Rally. "This is no joke. I have sworn to protect this regiment, and I will." Rally looked past Kanawa to the regiment slowly marching ahead of them.
"Then you had best make up your mind. Time is fleeting."
He reached into his jacket and pulled out the pouch, throwing it to Rally before he changed his mind. Rally caught it deftly and set it down on the bench beside her. Kanawa took a breath and tried to detect if he felt any different. Nothing. He wasn't sure if he was relieved by that or not.
"Now," Vecina said, pulling his arms back around her, "hold on and do not let go. You will feel things, but do not be alarmed."
She brought her hands in front of her face and immediately began tracing patterns in the air in front of her. It was mesmerizing. Her fingers moved with supple grace, like swans weaving their necks together in perfect rhythm. The air around them changed, or maybe it was a sound on the air. The hairs on his arms and the back of his neck vibrated, and Kanawa heard the natural world. He closed his eyes and slowly, tentatively, let his senses flow outward. It was a revelation like none he had experienced before. For the first time in his life, there was order in the chaos. Everything, all life, made sense. Each living thing had a distinct voice, and each formed part of an infinite web of threads, each unique and yet wholly connected to each other.
"Oh, my!"
Kanawa opened his eyes at Raleigh's surprise. Intricate filigrees of light danced in front of Vecina, her fingers tracing ever finer skeins of glowing thread. The air shimmered around them, and Kanawa recognized what he had seen back at the edge of the forest when Lorien had found them. Given 100 years, the best painters in the world could not hope to duplicate the beauty of what he saw, what he felt. It was as if life was a river, flowing through her, through him, both new and very old. All too soon, Vecina slowed her hands, and the light faded away, and with it the sense of order and reason to the world around him. She finally lowered her hands and stood panting in his arms. He realized his breathing was in time with hers.
"You can let go now," she said,
her voice little more than a whisper. He didn't want to. He wanted that feeling back. A bugle sounded from up ahead, and Kanawa reluctantly released her. Vecina climbed back up into the wagon as chaos reigned again around Kanawa, and he closed his mind to the world. Rally tossed him the pouch, which he stuffed back under his jacket. The last vestiges of the natural order burned away as the acorn rested against his chest.
"Our path will be quicker now,"
Vecina said, her voice still sounding a little breathless.
"And filled with more danger, I'm afraid," Rally said, stepping down from the wagon and walking back behind it.
Kanawa exchanged glances with Vecina, then held out his hand to help her down. She chose to ignore it, stepping down on her own, and the two of them walked back to see what Rally was doing.
"Grab hold of this, will you?" Rally said as Kanawa came around the corner.
He reached out and took the edge of the canvas tarp and held it high as she directed. Vecina was directed to hold the other side, and Rally hopped up into the back of the wagon, crawling in between the row of cages. Jeer padded around to watch. There was the sound of a lock being opened, and then a rumbling noise that shook the entire wagon. Jeer was off like a shot. There was the slithering of reins being pulled through, and then the sound of hooves disappearing, and Kanawa knew when Dara had bolted as well. A moment later, Rally backed out of the wagon, brushing herself off.
"Give a good pull now. Dandy's ready."
Kanawa looked over at Vecina, who shrugged her shoulders. They began pulling. The canvas tarp slid off, much to the annoyance of the pelican, who started flapping his wings and squawking as he was pulled along with it. Rally lifted the hem of her cloak and removed a large metal flask, strapped to one thigh. When the canvas finally came off, Wobbly flapped his way down to sit on the backboard of the wagon, with his bill open wide. Raleigh unstoppered the flask and upended its contents into Wobbly's mouth. As soon as the flask was empty, Raleigh grabbed the pelican by the middle, whispered something to him, and heaved him bodily into the air.
"Raleigh!"
Vecina cried, putting a hand to her mouth in surprise. Kanawha half expected the bird to come tumbling right back down, but with agonizing slowness, Wobbly flapped his wings and started to fly. He appeared confused at first, making one complete circle of the wagon. Then he veered to the west, although he still meandered through all points on the compass.
"Care to tell us what this is all about?" he asked, watching the pelican fly east, then a bit to the north, before doubling back and heading south. Wherever he was going, he was taking the scenic route.
Raleigh's answer was cut off by a shriek from inside the wagon, followed by the appearance of an enormous beaked head covered in fine ash-gray feathers. The beak, all black save for a tiny silver tip, was more than a foot long and curved like a drukhar. It turned its head and stared at them with a pair of brilliant amber eyes. They showed not the slightest inclination toward mercy. A cold warning surged through Kanawha's body, but already the threat was gone, as the bird's entire body emerged from the wagon. It shot straight into the sky, a gray and black streak propelled by two silver-colored sinewy legs. The wagon shuddered, and the wind from the bird's ascent blew dirt and straw into their faces. 20 feet in the air, it opened its wings, and they easily spanned the length of the wagon. It beat them once, twice, and was already another 50 feet in the air and angling toward Wobbly. For his part, the pelican squawked and started flapping his wings for all he was worth, leaving a trail of white feathers floating in the wind as he headed due west at a surprising rate of speed.
"He'll never make it,"
Vecina said, her fingers already starting to weave a design in front of her.
"Have a little faith, my dear," Raleigh said, walking over and placing the sleeve of her cloak over Vecina's hands. There was a strange vibration. It suddenly felt as if there wasn't enough air to breathe.
The feeling lasted only a moment, and then Raleigh was sliding her cloak off Vecina's hands and patting her on the arm.
"Dandy would never hurt, Wobbly. I just like to keep the old sot honest and put a bit of fire under his tail feathers once in a while. Besides, those two have worked together before. They know what they're doing."
"Care to tell us?" Kanawha asked, watching a still-surprised Vecina stare at her hands.
Raleigh motioned for him to start putting the canvas cover back on the wagon.
"You remember the dream you had about Martimus?" she asked, lifting up an edge of the canvas and handing it to Vecina, who still seemed a little stunned. "It wasn't a dream, not entirely. Someone has been intercepting my messages, and I have an idea who."
"What will those two do about it?"
Raleigh pulled a cigar out of her cloak and flicked a flint against a steel bolt head, drawing the sparks into the end of the cigar with a skill that Kanawha suspected was more than natural. She took a deep drag and smiled as she exhaled a thick cloud of blue smoke.
"They'll shine a little light on the subject," she said, cackling with mirth and refusing to explain any more.